A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You've seen the memes. A government agency posting like a troll, bragging about rounding people up. But what happens after the meme? What does the actual machinery look like? Daniel sent us a whole series of questions about this. He wants to know what the process of being deported actually feels like, step by step. From the moment someone's taken into custody, through the processing, to being placed in handcuffs on a special ICE-operated flight. And he's also asking about the DoubleTake social media presence. The agency posting gotcha content while running what it calls safe, secure, and humane transport. So today we're going to walk through that process, from the arrest to the air, and then talk about why ICE talks about it the way it does.
The scale here's the first thing people miss. ICE Air Operations runs over 200 aircraft. That's the largest law enforcement air fleet in the world, bigger than a lot of national air forces. This isn't a few planes shuffling people around. It's a full aviation division with chartered Boeing 737s, smaller jets, all retrofitted for detainee transport. The agency's own fact sheet describes these flights as safe, secure, and humane.
Safe, secure, and humane. That's the official framing. Meanwhile, the Twitter account is posting memes.
And that's the tension we're going to trace. But let's start with the individual experience, because the fleet size is an abstraction until you understand what it's like to be on one of those planes. Most deportations don't begin with a letter in the mail. They begin with an arrest. ICE's own FAQ is blunt about this. Individuals are taken into custody. That could be at a workplace raid, a traffic stop, a scheduled check-in that turns into detention. The person is handcuffed and transported to a processing facility.
So there's no, you have 30 days to get your affairs in order. It's a door opening, and then you're in the system.
Right. And the first document that matters is the Notice to Appear, the NTA. It's the charging document that initiates removal proceedings. But here's where the timeline accelerates in ways people don't expect. A lot of detainees waive their right to a hearing. Sometimes it's because they don't have legal representation and don't understand the process. Sometimes it's because the detention conditions are bad enough that they just want it over with. The average stay in ICE detention before removal is about 30 days, per ICE's own FAQ. 30 days from arrest to being put on a plane.
That number surprises me. I'd have guessed longer.
It can stretch much longer if there are legal challenges or if the receiving country drags its feet on accepting the person. But 30 days is the average. And during that time, the person is in a detention facility. Fingerprints, biometrics, background checks. The same kind of processing you'd see in any law enforcement context, except the endpoint isn't a trial. It's a flight.
Walk me through the flight itself. What does that actually look like?
ICE Air Operations uses chartered aircraft. These aren't commercial flights where the person gets a seat and a bag of pretzels. They're retrofitted planes with security personnel, medical escorts for detainees deemed high risk, and restraints. The ACLU has documented this extensively: handcuffs, ankle shackles, and in some cases restraint chairs where the person is belted to the seat. The flights often depart from smaller airports, not major hubs, which keeps the operation out of public view. ICE's own site emphasizes that meals are provided and that medical staff are on board. But the core experience is being processed in chains, loaded onto a plane, and flown to a country you may not have seen in decades.
The destination country acceptance letter. That's a detail that stuck with me reading through this.
Yes. Before a removal flight can depart, ICE needs what's called a destination country acceptance letter. The receiving country has to formally agree to take the person. If the country refuses, the flight doesn't leave. Or that particular person is pulled off and they go back to detention. Indefinitely, in some cases. There are people sitting in ICE detention right now because their country of citizenship won't accept them, and the U.S. can't legally hold them forever, but also won't release them. It's a legal limbo that the system doesn't have a good answer for.
So you're processed, you're in restraints, you're on a retrofitted jet. What does it feel like? Not the policy, the experience.
First-person accounts describe a kind of profound disorientation. You're being moved through a system where nobody explains what's happening next. The destination isn't always disclosed until the flight is in the air. Some detainees have reported not knowing which country they were being sent to until they landed. There's the physical discomfort of the restraints. The ACLU documented cases where people were kept in shackles for the entire duration of a multi-hour flight. And then there's the isolation. You're surrounded by other detainees, but you're not allowed to communicate freely. The security personnel are there to manage you, not to talk to you.
And for someone who was brought to the U.S. as a child, they're being flown to a country that's legally theirs, but culturally foreign. They may not speak the language. They may have no family there, no contacts, no place to go when the plane lands.
That's the part that doesn't fit into the safe, secure, and humane framing. The flight itself might meet some baseline standard, food, medical care, the absence of physical abuse. But the experience is being removed from everything you know, in restraints, to a destination you may never have chosen. And ICE's own language around this is sanitized to the point of being unrecognizable. Removal, transport, processing. None of those words capture what it's like to be strapped into a seat on a retrofitted 737 and flown out of the country.
The euphemism is the first layer of distance. The meme is the second.
Let's talk about the memes, because this is where ICE becomes unusual as a government agency. Their social media presence isn't just tone-deaf, it's a deliberate communication strategy. They've posted gotcha content celebrating arrests. They've used pop culture references and GIFs. There was a period where they were running something called Alien of the Day posts, literally highlighting individual detainees. The hashtags tell the story. Hashtag ICE out. Hashtag border security. It reads like a brand account, except the brand is law enforcement and the product is deportation.
And the contrast with other agencies is stark. NASA posts pictures of nebulae. The National Park Service posts pictures of bears. ICE posts memes about rounding people up.
The comparison matters because it shows this is a choice. Government agencies have social media accounts because they want to communicate with the public. Most of them choose a tone that's informative, maybe a little playful if the subject allows it. ICE chose a tone that's combative and irreverent, and it's consistent. This isn't a few rogue employees. The voice has been maintained across administrations, across personnel changes. It's an approved strategy.
What's the argument in favor of it? Because, presumably, someone inside the agency is making a case for why this is effective.
The argument, as best I can piece it together from statements and commentary, is twofold. One, it's transparency, showing the public that the agency is doing its job. Two, it's morale building, both for ICE personnel and for supporters of enforcement. The idea is that if you're going to have a mass deportation policy, you should be visible about it. Own it. Don't hide behind bureaucratic language.
Which is the exact opposite of safe, secure, and humane. That's the contradiction at the center of this. The fact sheets talk about humanitarian transport. The Twitter account talks about gotcha moments. Both are ICE. Both are official.
And the question is whether those two identities can coexist, or whether one of them is fundamentally dishonest. Critics argue the social media presence dehumanizes detainees, turns them into content. The Alien of the Day posts, specifically, were widely condemned because they singled out individuals for public attention. That's not transparency, that's spectacle. Supporters say it's just modern communications. Every agency has to meet people where they are and where there is on social media.
Meet people where they are, on the platform where you post a meme about someone being handcuffed.
The thing is, no, start with a policy shift. Because the social media makes more sense when you understand what's happening operationally. The current administration has expanded, expedited removal, increased detention capacity, and streamlined ICE air operations. The number of removal flights has increased year over year. The policy has moved from what used to be called catch and release. Detain and then release with a court date to catch and remove. The infrastructure for this was built over years. The fleet, the contracts with charter companies, the detention centers. It's all in place. The question now is how fast the machinery runs.
So the social media isn't separate from the policy. It's the public face of the acceleration.
When you're ramping up removals, you need public support, or at least public acceptance, the memes are a way of normalizing enforcement, making it seem routine, even entertaining. If deportation is just content in your feed, it stops feeling like a human being is being put on a plane in shackles.
The content flattens the human cost into a punchline.
And that's the knock-on effect that's hardest to measure. What happens to public empathy when enforcement becomes entertainment? We don't have good data on that, but we can see the mechanism. Every gotcha, post reframes an arrest as a win. Every meme turns a removal into a joke. Over time, that shapes how people think about what's actually happening.
There's a specific detail from the ACLU reports that I keep coming back to. The restraint chairs, not just handcuffs. A chair with straps that the person is belted into for the duration of the flight. That's the reality. And the meme is what the agency wants you to see instead.
The restraint chair is used for detainees who are considered a security risk. But the determination of who's a risk isn't transparent. It's made by the officers on the ground. And once you're in that chair, you're in it for hours. The ACLU documented cases where people with no history of violence were placed in restraint chairs for entire flights. The agency's position is that these are safety measures. But the experience of being strapped into a chair and flown out of the country isn't something that fits neatly into a fact sheet.
Let's talk about the last-minute cancellations. The destination country refusal.
This happens more often than people realize. A flight is scheduled, the detainees are processed, they're loaded onto the plane, and then the receiving country says no, they won't accept this person. Maybe the paperwork is wrong. Maybe there's a diplomatic dispute. Maybe the country simply doesn't want to take people back. Whatever the reason, the flight is delayed or canceled for that individual, and the person goes back to detention.
Back to the cell. Back to the uncertainty. No resolution.
And no timeline for when they'll be on the next flight. Could be days. Could be months. The destination country acceptance letter is a bureaucratic requirement that most people never think about, but it's the single document that determines whether someone gets on a plane or stays in limbo. ICE can't remove someone without it. And some countries are slow to issue them, or refuse outright.
So you have people sitting in detention, already processed, already through the system, but they can't be removed because the country they're supposed to be sent to won't take them. And they can't be released because they're under a removal order.
It's a gap in the system that nobody has a good answer for. The Supreme Court has ruled that indefinite detention isn't permissible. There has to be a reasonable time frame for removal. But reasonable is fuzzy, and in practice, people sit, some for years.
Years in detention, waiting for a country to say yes to a piece of paper.
And that's the part of the system that's invisible. The memes don't show the person who's been in detention for 18 months because their country of citizenship won't issue an acceptance letter. The fact sheets don't mention the legal limbo. The whole public-facing apparatus is designed to make the process look clean and efficient. The reality is messier, slower, and more cruel in ways that don't photograph well.
The cruelty isn't always in the big dramatic moments. It's in the waiting. The not knowing.
First-person accounts bear that out. People describe the uncertainty as worse than the physical conditions. You don't know when your court date is. You don't know which country you're being sent to. You don't know if the flight will actually leave. The system processes you, but it doesn't inform you. You're moved through it, not guided through it.
So we've walked through the individual experience and the system that enables it. Now let's talk about the message.
The message is where ICE becomes unique among federal agencies. I've been trying to think of a parallel, and I can't find one. The Department of Defense doesn't post memes about airstrikes. The FBI doesn't post GIFs about arrests. There's a norm in government communications that law enforcement actions are reported, not celebrated. ICE broke that norm deliberately.
And the question is, what breaking that norm does to the culture of the agency itself?
That's the deeper issue. When an agency's public face is combative and irreverent, it shapes who wants to work there and how they behave. It signals that this is an organization where enforcement isn't just a job, but an identity. The memes aren't just for the public. They're for the people inside the agency. They're a way of saying, we're the ones who get it. That's powerful for morale, but it also creates a culture where the human stakes of the work are harder to see.
Because if you're posting gotcha content about the people you're arresting, you've already decided they're not people you need to feel anything about.
Right. The framing is always illegal aliens, a term that's legally precise but also dehumanizing. The agency's own language strips people of context. They're not parents, workers, neighbors, they're status violators. And once you've reduced someone to a legal category, it's easier to make a meme about them.
The term alien is in the statute. It's the legal term of art. But using it in a meme is a choice.
It's a choice that signals contempt. And contempt is the emotional register of ICE's social media, not professionalism. Contempt. The posts read like they're mocking the people they're arresting. That's not normal for a law enforcement agency. Police departments don't post memes mocking suspects. It's considered unprofessional and legally risky. But ICE has carved out a space where that tone is acceptable, even encouraged.
What's the legal risk? If you're posting about specific arrests, aren't you potentially prejudicing cases?
That's been raised by immigration attorneys. When ICE posts about an arrest before the person has had a hearing, it could be seen as prejudicial. It also creates safety concerns. People have been targeted after being featured in ICE social media posts. The agency's response has generally been that the posts are about completed enforcement actions, not pending cases. But the line between completed and pending is blurry when removal proceedings can take months or years.
The social media strategy has real consequences beyond the tone. It affects actual cases, actual people.
It affects public perception in ways that are hard to walk back. Once you've trained your audience to see deportation as entertainment, it's hard to ask them to see it as a serious policy question. The memes don't invite reflection. They invite a reaction, cheer or boo, like or share. The complexity of someone's life, why they came, what they built, what they're losing, doesn't fit in a GIF.
The fact sheet and the meme are two versions of the same agency. One says, safe, secure, and humane. The other says, gotcha. And both are true in the sense that they both represent real parts of what ICE does. The question is, which one defines the institution?
The meals were packed in Mesa, Arizona. I worked a summer for a contractor that did in-flight catering for ICE Air. We'd get the manifest 48 hours before departure, number of detainees, any dietary restrictions, medical requirements. The meals went into sealed containers that the security personnel would distribute on board. I never saw a detainee. The ground crew didn't see detainees. They were loaded through a separate corridor. We just saw the manifests. What struck me was the destination column. You'd see a name, age, country of birth, and then the destination country. And sometimes they didn't match. A man born in Mexico being flown to Honduras because that's where his passport was from. A woman born in Guatemala being flown to El Salvador. The paperwork was correct, legally correct, but the person had never lived in the country they were being sent to. Their parents brought them here as children. Now they're being sent to a place that's legally theirs, but culturally foreign. The other thing was the cancellations. We'd prep meals for a flight, and then the night before we'd get a call, flight's off. Receiving country refused acceptance, and the meals went into storage and the detainees stayed in detention. Happened maybe one flight in 10. The destination country acceptance letter is the whole game. Without it, the plane doesn't move, and some countries are very slow to issue them.
The acceptance letter as bottleneck. That connects to something we were saying earlier about indefinite detention. If 1 in 10 flights gets canceled because a country won't accept someone, that's not an edge case. That's a regular feature of the system.
It's higher during diplomatic disputes. When a country gets mad at the U.S. about something, suddenly the acceptance letters slow down. It's a pressure point. The detainees don't know any of this, of course. They just know their flight got canceled and they're going back to the cell.
The person is a bargaining chip in a diplomatic negotiation they have no part in.
The manifests don't say bargaining chip. They say name, age, country of origin, destination, dietary restrictions. Halal meal, vegetarian, no restrictions. That's what I saw. Names and meal preferences. My supervisor had been doing it for 12 years. He said the strangest thing was how quiet the ground crew was. Nobody talked. You'd load the meals, check the manifest, and go home. 12 years of that.
The silence around the operation is part of what makes the social media presence so jarring. On the ground, it's all sealed containers and separate corridors and nobody talking. Online, it's memes and gotcha posts. Two completely different relationships to the same thing.
The meme is the version they want you to see. The silent ground crew is the version that actually moves people.
I still have one of the old manifests, not with names, just the count. 42 detainees, Mesa to San Salvador, August something. The numbers, what I remember. 42 people on a retrofitted 737 with halal meals and ankle shackles. And somewhere online, there was probably a post about it.
the cutting room floor detail that didn't fit earlier. IC Air Operations doesn't just fly deportees out. They also fly detainees between facilities within the U.S. So someone arrested in California might be flown to a detention center in Texas before they're ever put on an international flight. The system moves people around internally before it removes them. It's not one arrest, one flight. It's a network.
That internal movement can be disorienting in its own right. You're transferred across state lines, away from any family or legal support you had, to a facility where nobody knows your case. It's a way of isolating people before removal. The agency frames it as logistics. The experience is being disappeared into a system that keeps moving you further from anything familiar.
The open question I keep coming back to is what happens to public empathy as this scales up? The infrastructure is in place. The fleet, the contracts, the detention centers. The social media strategy is in place. The policy direction is set. The question is whether a system can be both humane and meme-worthy, and what it costs the people inside it when the answer is no.
The next administration could scale this up or scale it back, but the machinery doesn't go away. The planes are there. The contracts are there. The acceptance letter process is there. What changes is the political will. How many flights? How fast? How public? The infrastructure is the constant.
If you want to understand the machinery behind the meme, check the show notes for links to ICE's own fact sheets and the ACLU's reports. And if you've got a weird prompt for us, send it in to show@myweirdprompts.com.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.